Turning now to Nikola, our reading of Nikola Tesla, of Margaret Cheney's Tesla, Man Out of Time, as we read about his life after returning from Colorado in 1900. Consider what it means for the power guys of that day, the statesmen and the financiers and the industrialists that Nikola appealed to for support. Multiply, but in particular, as World War I loomed, he asked for help in ending World War I and then later on World War II by using his particle beam weapon that can take down aircraft. These letters are on file in the Library of Congress. So, turning now to our reading of chapter 16. And I think we know what the power guys of that day did when they found out about an EMF weapon and wireless power of availability, the technology for that. We can imagine what they would do. And we're going to talk more about today one of the things they would do, which would be completely surround Nikola Tesla with false folks, as they did with Prince. Mark Twain, 70 years of age and relishing his fame, returned to America. He and Tesla sought each other's company as often as their work and other demands permitted, meeting usually at the Players. And I'm not suggesting Mark Twain was one of them, by the way. I don't know if any of you have checked out the book I wrote, Waking Up, Freeing Ourselves from Work. But there's a lovely story in it. I'm quoting Nikola Tesla in the chapter, at length in the chapter, The Two Winds. And he tells from his autobiography a lovely story of being near death almost as a youngster young man. I'm not sure exactly his age, actually. But it was a moment when he almost died. And because of that, his father released him from his promise secured under coercion to enter, I believe, the clergy or something like that. And Nikola wanted to become an electrical engineer. Electricity has always been his thing. And because he almost lost his son, because he was afraid of losing his son, he released him from that promise and said to him, if you live, you can be whatever you want to be, essentially. Anyway, while he was trying to survive, get his health back, he had, I forget which illness he had, but someone brought him the works of an American writer that was completely fresh and original, and turns out it was Mark Twain's works. And when he finally met Samuel Clemens, he told him this story. He said that, you know, reading your completely fresh stories just about turned things around for me, you know. And he said that Mark Twain burst into tears. To have that kind of confirmation that one's work matters is definitely is something anyone wants to hear who's striven hard to make a difference with their work. Anyway, sorry for the digression. Mark Twain and he got together at the Players. Katherine Johnson, who I am referring to as a false folk, distressed by Tesla's commuting to Long Island, scarcely knew from one day to the next where to send her invitations. "I will be here this evening," she wrote, "but suppose you are throughout the week at your country residence in the remote wilds of Long Island." However, If you happen to be rusticating at your favorite resort, the Waldorf, send me a line when you receive this and let me know when I may expect you. I want to see if you have grown younger, more fashionable, more proud. But whatever you may be, you will always find me the same. Unquote. This invitation was unusual in its use of the singular pronoun. Robert apparently was traveling, or he was otherwise unable to entertain. Almost certainly, Tesla did not accept. But the early winter brought them all together for a holiday celebration on Thanksgiving Eve. Tesla's thank you note to Catherine urged her not to despise millionaires since he was still hard at work trying to become one. "My stocks have gone up considerably today," he wrote. "If it continues for a few weeks like this, the globe will be girdled soon." Catherine sent another appeal urging him to, quote, "come for my sake as I need cheer, and who is all potent as you?" He put her off. Christmas he normally spent with the Filipovs. She wrote 5 days before the Yule to remind him, adding, "You must come here tomorrow evening, as I want to see you for many reasons, to know how you are. But why try to enumerate them? You know them all except one. I have something to tell you by way of Germany. When I wrote you last Sunday morning, I sent you my first thoughts out of sleep. I knew that you were depressed, but didn't know why. Please let me have a word, dear Mr. Tesla, that I may have something to count on, something to expect." Unquote. The winter passed with his anxieties over Wardenclyff mounting daily, until it seemed there would be no end to his trials. The long, steaming summer returned to New York, with Tesla's routine seldom varying. To Scherf he wrote again of money problems. "Troubles and troubles, but they do just seem to track me. The Port Jefferson Bank will have to get along with interest, assuming that I can scratch it together." Soon afterward, however, he hastened to send exciting news. He'd had a meeting with Mr. Frick, the industrialist and nouveau riche art collector. Since becoming manager of the Carnegie Steel Company Trust in the 1890s, he had managed to double the size of the plant through the assiduous use of exploited labor and cheap materials, now enjoying the rewards of his prescience. And I have to comment, what a word to use, prescience, to name the assiduous and irreverent chewing on our own grandmother's thighs. I'm tempted to launch into Ovid's story of Erisithon. I wrote, I was preparing for this show last week, and in the interim, since we had no stream last week, internet stream, in addition to having that conversation with my son that I posted to the Rainbow Children page and to the audio for this show's page, I also recorded a reading of the Erisithon story, since I talk about it. I refer to it all the time, from Ovid, from 2,000 years ago. And if you get a chance, check it out. So you will have a better sense of the full meanings implied in that reference. Erisithon from Ovid. So I don't have to launch into Ovid's story. You can listen to it on the audio page. Now, enjoying the rewards of his prescience, he was casting about for new investments, Mr. Frick, the industrialist. The inventor's note to Scherf exuded optimism. Troubles are many, but progress is encouraging. Had a very promising session with Mr. Frick, and am full of hope he will advance capital still necessary, he emphasized. I shouldn't smile. This was hard times. At about this time, Tesla and Johnson had an editorial exchange over Hertzian waves. Tesla had sent the latter an article for Century magazine that puzzled Johnson because of his assertion that Hertzian waves were not employed in wireless telegraphy. "There is Hertzian telegraphy in theory only," Tesla explained, "since these waves diminish very rapidly with distance. Hertz and Crookes, he said, did not apply true sources of power since they used the Ruhmkorff coil and a simple spark gap. Tesla claimed that he'd made no progress in the field until he was inspired to invent his oscillation transformer, with which he obtained greatly magnified intensity. He believed, after experimenting with different forms of aerials, that the signals picked up by the instruments were actually induced by earth currents instead of being etheric space waves. Kenneth Swezy, who's going to comment on this when we get back to it, but we're going to interrupt it at this moment, to learn more about Kenneth Swezy and his study with Tesla and his presence in Tesla's life, as well as to get a little bit more, to get a better sense of the degree to which Nikola Tesla has been suppressed.